Well, thank you, Mr. Curtis, and good afternoon, everyone. Wonderful to be able to be here. And it's always nice to be able to be reminded of the need for prayer in the opening. We see is able to catch up during services. Well, what is better than having one great thing? Having two great things, exactly. If you might remember the commercials, double mint gum. If you're from the West or the Southwest, I was reminded of this as we were driving out to Colorado. You can go by In-N-Out Burger and you can get a double-double. It's twice as good as a single. If you're a fan of Wendy's, you can get Dave's double and you can have the double patty on the burger. If you're a person of chance in a game of double or nothing, if you're betting on something. Another one, if you have two of something, you should share. Remember the old Kit Kat commercials from a couple decades ago? But is having two of something always better? Today I'd like to look at one verse. Read to James chapter 1, verses 6 through 8. We'll read here what James writes and remind us of here in this concept. We like to generally have more of things, and more is better. And two is better than one. You can probably think of a proverb that talks about that. But James, verse 6, the latter half of that, it says, "He who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways." Today I'd like to take a few minutes to try to understand what this means for us as Christians and why we might have to fight against double-mindedness in our walk with God. So firstly, I'd like to try to do a definition of sorts. What does it mean to be double-minded? Well, being double-minded refers to a person who is divided in their loyalty. You might think of serving God and serving mammon. You might think of someone you know who's a big fan for one team one day, and then they're a big fan of another team another day. You're like, well, hold on. How did that happen? Where did your loyalty go? So the loyalty is divided. It is, for us as Christians, spiritual inconsistency. And James alludes to this. If you go back a little bit here, we see, actually, that if you go to verse 5 of James 1, it says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God." So the individual who is lacking wisdom is asking God for that wisdom. And it says in verse 6 that let him ask in faith. So he's asking for wisdom, supposed to be asking for wisdom, in faith. But then there's the doubt that creeps in. And this is so easy for us as Christians to have that doubt creep in, because today we might call it, in our modern vernacular, logic creeps in. Why would that happen? Why would this be something that transpires? It doesn't make sense. And then the doubt can creep in. Now, a double-minded person is a victim of this doubt that creeps in, because you go about having a person who might pray, but then not quite believe that it's going to happen. Not quite believe that God will make good on what is asked. They attend church, they study, but then in the moment of their challenge, their heart is split between faith and fear, or faith and doubt, and it becomes, instead of a belief system, a totality of faith, it becomes an observance that is just really based on convenience, on tradition, rather than what God is telling us in our word, in His Word. So, being double-minded there talks about that split dichotomy of the difficulty of believing, truly believing in God. Now, why is this dangerous? James tells us here, again, if you look in verse 8, he says, "A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways." That instability has a propensity to reach every corner of our lives. Because when something is unstable, the theme of camp this year is building on the foundation. And it's kind of tough to build on the foundation of something that is unstable, that is shaky. And if we're double-minded, we don't have that solid foundation. And to be a double-minded Christian, we won't be able to withstand the storms. The rains will beat, the floods will come, and great will be the fall of the house. We have to have a singularity of mind. Trying to serve God without a full commitment, as it says, if you put your hand to the plow and look back, and there are many other verses that talk about this, sell all that you have to follow me. If we don't, then we leave ourselves vulnerable to compromise. Because that's what the double-mindedness is. It says, well, do I follow God all the way, or do I maybe step back, pull back a little bit? And we can become spiritually lukewarm. If you look up lukewarm, it's brought up in Revelation chapter 3, verse 16, talking about the church in Laodicea. And that word for lukewarm is kliaros. Kliaros. What it means is it's a condition, as it says in Strong's, it's a condition of the soul wretchedly fluctuating between a torpor, so kind of like storms, and a fervor of love. So you're going between one or the other. You're not quite sure where it is. You're just waffling between the two, these extremes. But God is wanting people who are cold or hot, as you said. That double-mindedness, what it ends up doing for us, is it indicates in us that inner conflict. Because we haven't arrived at the conclusion that we need to. And that inconsistency then breeds the spiritual instability. Today, I might obey God. Tomorrow, I might justify sin. I can say that I trust in God, but really what I'm doing is I'm leaning on my own understanding. I'll trust you as long as I get what you're doing, God. And these are the dangers of being double-minded. So how can we overcome double-mindedness? This is one of those things, again, we'll talk about it. It's like, oh, no, I'm not double-minded. But if we're honest with ourselves, there are components of our life where we are, each of us, double-minded. Where it's like, it's hard to put that all the way in God's court. Whatever it is, whatever the challenge is. Well, let's read the whole context here in James. We'll pick it up in verse 2. James chapter 1, we'll read verses 2 through 8. And we see here the beautiful antidote, if you will. It says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. We start off this passage and we really see the walk of a Christian. It's going to be tough. We're going to have trials. But we get to count it all joy when we go into those trials, because what those trials are supposed to do is to produce in us a test, with the outcome being faith. And if we see any of the trials, any of the tribulations, any of the tests as something that produces faith, well, then that's a good thing, because it's producing what we need to have in order to be able to then weather further difficulties, tests, and trials. And it takes patience to do just that, which is why James says, let patience have its perfect work. Let it go through and bear out, and we see. Because if we do that, we may become perfect and complete, lacking nothing. This is the call that God has given each of us. But this is where it gets difficult, because he says, you know what? I understand that the tendency that you as my children have is to have a difficulty of faith, to have a double-mindedness. But if you ask me, I'll give it to you, and I'll give it to you liberally. That's such an amazing promise. He says, I will give it to you liberally. So how do we overcome? We have to allow those tests, allow those trials to produce in us faith instead of doubt. It's easier said than done, but I think that we have a body here and a family who, if you talk to anyone, you'll find out that they've gone through difficult times, and yet they are still here. Why is that? Hopefully it's not because we're just so callous we say, I can't go anywhere else. But sometimes that's the case. But hopefully, action, or your shoes don't have traction. Not too long ago, I bit it pretty hard in our chicken pasture because I stepped and it's like, whoop, down I went. I was doing so well that day, but that was the last thing I did was fall in the chicken pasture. That's just an object lesson. You can, if you don't have sure footing, again, that is the essence of double-mindedness. Conclusion here, what we ought to be doing is be pursuing the single-mindedness, which means we're fully trusting in God, even when it is hard. We fully obey His law, even when we get pushback from the world, and we fully submit to His will. This is one of those things, as I had had conversation with Mr. Samet, as he's looking down the barrel of what's in front of him. To have James 1, verses 2 through 8 really is a mirror that we should hold up to ourselves. Are we stable? Are we walking with God, or do we find ourselves to be double-minded? God wants our whole heart, and a double-minded person is unstable. So let's heed James's warning. We reject a full-hearted, faithful walk that God calls us to do.